You are working on the cardiology consultation team at your hospital, and you get called to the ER for a 27-year-old patient with a syncope episode and EKG abnormalities. Upon your assessment, you see an athletic patient who has a 6-month history of dyspnea and presyncope symptoms on exertion. You also find a positive history for sudden cardiac death of unknown cause in a close relative. On physical exam, you find a systolic crescendo-decrescendo murmur which gets louder when he bears down, and the ECG shows Q waves in lateral leads and significant left ventricular hypertrophy. You decide to order a transthoracic echocardiogram to complete your evaluation, and you find asymmetrical septal hypertrophy with presence of a left ventricular outflow obstruction. The working diagnosis is HCM. Today, our patient has hypertrophic obstructive cardiomyopathy, and you are the doctor. Welcome to The Internet Work, a podcast written by medical residents meant to serve you better on the wards and on call. Today's episode is titled In the Thick of the Action, Approach to Hypertrophic Obstructive Cardiomyopathy. Time for our minute physiology. The myocardium is responsible for the contractility of the heart, which results in adequate cardiac output. Cardiomyocytes, the contractile cells of the myocardium, contain branched fibers connected with intercalated discs, allowing for synchronous contraction of the heart. The cardiomyocytes are made up of sarcomeres. These consist of myosin, thick, and actin, thin, filaments, which slide over one another during muscle contraction. In hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, genetic mutations in the sarcomere protein genes result in hyperlinking between the actin and myosin, resulting in a superperformant contraction and increased wall thickness. Most often in the ventricular septum, however, other distributions are possible. This occurs in the absence of systemic conditions capable of causing the hypertrophy of the heart. These hearts also have other structural differences from a normal heart. These can include an abnormal mitral valve or extrapapillary muscles, crowding the ventricle and pushing the mitral leaflets towards the septum. Together, these abnormalities cause outflow obstruction and inevitably symptoms. Dynamic left ventricular outflow tract obstruction, LVOTO, mitral regurgitation, diastolic dysfunction, myocardial ischemia, and arrhythmias can all play a role in the pathophysiology and presentation of hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. LVOTO can either occur at rest or with provocation. The septal hypertrophy causing narrowing of the left ventricular outflow tract, as well as the systolic anterior motion of the anterior mitral valve leaflet containing the septum, both contribute to this dynamic obstruction in 75% of patients. This obstruction causes a mechanical barrier to blood flow exiting the heart through the LVOT, leading to, often, very high pressure gradients between the LV and the aorta. The presence of a peak LVOT gradient of at least 30 millimeters of mercury is considered indicative of obstruction and can be worsened by increased cardiac contractility, decreased preload, or lowering afterload. Diastolic dysfunction is due to chamber stiffness in the context of myocardial hypertrophy, ischemia, and interstitial fibrosis. Patients with HCM with associated impaired ventricular relaxation may become dependent on the atrial kick for ventricular filling and therefore poorly tolerate atrial fibrillation and other supraventricular arrhythmias. Finally, mitral regurgitation is often secondary to the LVOTO or primary due to leaflet abnormalities. In LVOTO, the systolic anterior motion, SAM, of the mitral valve leads to loss of leaflet cooptation as the anterior leaflet is dragged into the LVOT, resulting in a posteriorly directed regurgitant jet. Significant mitral regurgitation may only be evident during provocation. All right, so now that we've talked about the basic physiology, let's talk about the approach. In the approach to hypertrophic obstructive cardiomyopathy, it is important to understand its etiology and clinical presentation. HOCM is an autosomal dominant cardiomyopathy. Up to 60% of patients with HCM have a familial pattern suggestive of an inherited disease, and approximately 30% have an identifiable pathogenic genetic variant. The clinical course of HCM can be variable from one patient to another. For some, it can be associated with a normal life expectancy, minimal to no symptoms without any need for treatment, whereas others can have significant consequences, including tachyarrhythmias and sudden cardiac death. among those with clinically significant HCM, dyspnea, fatigue, chest pain, and syncope are some of the most common symptoms. Both supraventricular and ventricular arrhythmias can also be identified. Signs and symptoms are not strongly associated with the presence or magnitude of obstruction, nor the extent of the left ventricular hypertrophy. Your first step in any patient encounter will be to assess whether your patient is stable or not. Are their ABCs stable? What are their vitals? This is especially crucial in HCM with LVOT obstruction, where patients can present with hemodynamic instability and heart failure. Once you've ensured the stability of your patient, you can move forward with your assessment. When dealing with a thick heart, one always should take a moment to focus on the origins of the patient, and in particular, their family history, including history of HCM, of a thick heart, or of sudden cardiac death. On history, you want to clarify the patient's symptoms if there are any present. As mentioned, this can be dyspnea, angina, or atypical chest pain, fatigue, palpitations, presyncope, and syncope. When getting a patient's history, it should be noted that these symptoms are not specific to HCM and can be found in many other diseases, both cardiac and non-cardiac. It is important to ask about the onset of these symptoms, since they will frequently be provoked or exacerbated by exertion. The physical exam can provide clues towards a possible diagnosis of HCM, although it may also be normal. Examining the jugular vein, precordial inspection, and auscultation are all helpful. Most of the classic physical exam findings are associated with the LVOT obstruction. A diffuse, forceful LV apical impulse may be identified. The jugular venous pulse may be present with prominent A waves. Upon cardiac auscultation, a split-second heart sound and an S4 heart sound can be heard, reflecting diastolic dysfunction. Patients with HCM may develop many types of systolic murmurs, but they will most commonly be associated with the LVOT obstruction and mitral regurgitation. Significant LVOT obstruction will cause a harsh crescendo-decrescendo systolic murmur, best heard at the apex and lower left sternal border. With a systolic anterior motion of the mitral valve and associated mitral regurgitation, there is usually a posteriorly directed jet, producing a mid to late systolic murmur at the apex, rather than the classical hollow systolic murmur in primary mitral regurgitation. Differentiating LVOT obstruction murmur in HCM from similar systolic murmurs can be difficult. Different maneuvers affecting the degree of obstruction can be used to help identify the murmur. The crescendo-decrescendo systolic murmur can be intensified by going from a squatting, sitting position to an upright posture, or by performing a Valsalva maneuver, therefore decreasing preload. Increasing afterload with the hand grip maneuver will do the opposite and decrease the intensity of the obstruction and therefore the murmur. It should be noted that these physical exam findings are not specific to hypertrophic cardiomyopathy and can be found in other clinical entities causing left ventricular outflow tract obstruction. Now let's move on to the workup necessary for your diagnosis. You will want to order a chest x-ray, especially when the patient's main complaint is that of dyspnea and you are unsure of the underlying etiology. An ECG should also be ordered to identify any abnormalities, in addition to establishing a baseline for future comparison. Typically, the ECG is abnormal, with repolarization changes, left axis deviation, left ventricular hypertrophy, as well as P-wave abnormalities representative of left and/or right atrial enlargement. It may also show arrhythmias, such as atrial fibrillation or non-sustained ventricular tachycardia. When you have a clinical suspicion of hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, whether with or without obstruction, you will need to order a transthoracic echocardiogram in your initial workup. Often, an echocardiogram may be sufficient to confirm the diagnosis. The echocardiogram can demonstrate cardiac morphology, systolic and diastolic function, the presence and severity of any LVOT gradient, as well as the degree of mitral regurgitation. A bedside exam may be useful in experienced hands, particularly in acute situations. Characteristic findings on echocardiography include unexplained increased LV wall thickness of at least 15 millimeters anywhere in the left ventricular wall, most commonly in the basal anterior septum and typically asymmetric in distribution. Systolic anterior motion of the mitral valve, which positions the mitral valve within the LVOT during systole. The greater the duration of mitral septal contact, the greater the LVOTO. Presence and magnitude in millimeters of mercury of LV outflow gradient pressures using continuous wave Doppler in the apical long axis. Increased left atrium size, normal hyperdynamic LV systolic function, and LV diastolic dysfunction. For patients who don't have obstruction under resting conditions, stress/exercise echocardiography is the preferred diagnostic method. For patients suspected to have HCM in whom their echocardiography is normal or inconclusive, a cardiac MRI would be indicated. Differences in the pattern and distribution of LV hypertrophy, cavity dimensions, and the pattern of late gadolinium enhancement distribution can help differentiate HCM from other causes of left ventricular hypertrophy and help evaluate the risk of sudden cardiac death. In addition to the latter investigations, a 24 to 48-hour ambulatory ECG monitoring is recommended as part of the initial workup to identify those at risk of sudden cardiac death, as well as to guide arrhythmia management. Given that this is an inherited cardiomyopathy, genetic testing is suggested to elucidate the genetic basis and facilitate the identification of family members at risk. Finally, due to risk of sudden cardiac death in patients with hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, non-invasive sudden cardiac death risk assessment is recommended upon initial diagnosis and every 1 to 2 years thereafter. Time to talk about treatment. Treatment for obstructive HCM is based on the presence of symptoms caused by the LVOT obstruction. Asymptomatic patients do not require medical or surgical therapy and can continue with regular monitoring and echocardiography. Firstly, there are general measures that should be explained to patients upon initial diagnosis. Patients need to maintain adequate hydration during activities or illnesses that can lead to dehydration, and avoid treatments that will decrease preload or afterload or increase contractility. For example, nitroglycerin, ACE inhibitors and ARBs, diuretics, and digoxin. Second, for most patients with significant symptoms attributable to LVOT obstruction, medical therapy is the first-line treatment, with a non-vasodilating beta blocker, for example, nadolol or metoprolol. If this isn't tolerated, contraindicated, or if symptoms persist despite maximum dosing, a non-dihydropyridine calcium channel blocker can serve as an alternative or be added to the therapy. In patients who remain symptomatic despite first and second line therapy, additional medical therapy includes disopyramide combined with a beta blocker or calcium channel blocker, or, rather new to the market, are myosin inhibitors. It should be noted that patients on a myosin inhibitor require frequent echocardiographic monitoring of the LVEF to ensure that there is no significant drop in systolic function. In patients who are refractory to medical therapy who elect to proceed to surgical septal reduction management, choices of therapy include surgical myectomy and alcohol septal ablation. Surgical myectomy, which involves removing excessive myocardial thickness with a scalpel, is the treatment of choice in patients requiring mitral valve repair, surgery for morphologic abnormalities contributing to obstruction, extreme septal hypertrophy, or other cardiac surgery. Often, alcohol septal ablation involves identifying an artery that supplies blood to the basal septum and injecting alcohol into that artery, thereby causing a localized myocardial infarction. It is prioritized in patients in whom surgery is contraindicated, the risk is considered unacceptable, or in patients with a more borderline septal thickness. If a patient presents in acute shock in the context of HCM and LVOT obstruction, with hypotension and/or low cardiac output, the management is focused on minimizing the effect of the obstruction. This should include increasing preload with administration of IV fluids or blood, sometimes challenging when the patient is in shock, and so avoiding diuresis may be enough. Increasing afterload with vasopressors without beta-1 receptor agonist activity, such as phenylephrine, and administration of negative inotropes to decrease the velocity of flow through the LVOT, including beta blockers. Positive inotropic agents should be avoided given the increased risk of LVOT obstruction with agents such as dobutamine. Atrial fibrillation is the most common sustained arrhythmia in patients with HCM, and ischemic strokes are 8 times more frequent in HCM with atrial fibrillation compared to those in sinus rhythm. The CHAD score is not validated in the HCM population, and given the high risk of recurrent atrial fibrillation and stroke, oral anticoagulation should be initiated even with only one episode. In addition, patients with HCM tend to poorly tolerate being in atrial fibrillation and benefit from conversion to normal sinus rhythm with antiarrhythmics such as amiodarone. Let's finish with our medicine minute. The Explorer HCM clinical trial, published in 2020, evaluated the efficacy and safety of mavacamten, a reversible cardiac myosin inhibitor, in symptomatic HOCM, where it demonstrated improvement in exercise capacity, NYHA functional class, and LVOT obstruction as early as 4 weeks from starting the medication. This trial played a pivotal role in the medical treatment of the disease. Since then, more recent studies have evaluated the long-term impact of the drug on patients with symptomatic disease. A systematic review and meta-analysis published in October of 2023 in the AHA Circulation Journal demonstrated a significant improvement in NYHA functional class from baseline with mavacamten compared to placebo. The medication use also showed a significant reduction in need for septal reduction therapy, VALOR-HCM trial. It remains unknown what effect mavacamten may have on arrhythmias and sudden death. It may decrease the need for ICD. These exciting findings may just be the start of what's to come in the management of hypertrophic obstructive cardiomyopathy. All right, that's all for today. Thank you for listening to today's episode entitled In the Thick of the Action, An Approach to Hypertrophic Obstructive Cardiomyopathy. This episode is written by Dr. Kate Hachin, internal medicine resident, and reviewed by Dr. Michael Chetrit, cardiologist, and Dr. John Angelopoulos, general internist. This episode was recorded and produced by Leah Karyanopoulos. The Internet Work series was created by Allison Lai and is executively managed by Leah Karyanopoulos and Zara Morale. Theme song music by Lakshmi Visanthamoa. As always, don't forget to check out www.theinternetwork.com for associated resources and infographics. Thank you for listening, and we hope to see you again soon.